You are listening to BensTorah.com.
We're going to continue Mirtzah Hashem. We're planning to continue our little excursion into the mitzvah of living in Eretz Israel. And last week was the first shiur on the topic, introductory shiur. And tonight we're going to be seeing how the Ramban, who was perhaps one of the biggest Rishonic Zionists that existed in this time period, how he gave a halachic and hashkafic definition of the what he calls the six major points that relate to what is the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael b'zman hazeh. And we're going to go through on page number two, turn the from the two psukim pages, which are the first two, which we discussed last week. Go now to the go past the psukim.
Go past the psukim. Yeah.
And then go to page two. Okay. And you should have a page where there are six numbers.
Yeah.
This six numbers correspond to the 6 points that the Ramban, between his Perish L'Chumish and his Perish of the Sefer HaMitzvos, that he put together to define the parameters. We'll discuss them tonight to show you what he really felt, not only on a theoretical basis, but on a personal basis as well, which we begin with number one on top of the page. The Ramban, in his Sefer HaMitzvos, Nachmanides, lists the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael as officially one of the Tayag mitzvahs. And halacha lamasa, he paskins, it's not just a mitzvah satzibur, it's not just a mitzvah of a community of klal yisrael to mekayim this mitzvah, but even if you are only a yachid and there isn't a tzibur coming with you, you have a mitzvah deraisa even as a yochid to make aliyah to Eretz Yisrael when you're able to. And this applies not only when we're in the avos state of geula, of redemption, but even when we're in a matzav of galus, if a Jew was able to make his way to Eretz Yisrael and to set up home there and to live and dwell there, he has been kaim an act of mitzvah, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, that applies under all circumstances, both Zman Geula and Zman Golos. The chiyah to live in Eretz Yisrael does not stop no matter which matzav we are in. Very important factor. This is surely not what Neturei Keter and Satna preach, but the Ramban was of the opinion, and I would say by and large most Rishonim and most contemporary Gedolei HaPoskim agree that the mitzvah Yishuv Eretz applies even b'zman ha-galus. And the Rambam, when we get to it eventually, I will show you, even the Rambam held the mitzvah Yishuv Eretz applies with all its halachic ramifications, even b'zman galus, that Eretz might be controlled momentarily politically by the non-Jewish world, which historically in the Rambam's time was the case. The mitzvah Yishuv Eretz applies with all the halachic ramifications, as is articulated in the Talmudic texts and the halachic commentaries. Now, why is this important? Because historically, the Ramban himself, on a personal level, had a major dilemma. He was, in fact, without a question, the Gadol Hadar of the 1200s in the Spanish communities. He lived in Spain, but for all Spanish Jewry, for all Sfaradim, he was actually the Gadol Hadar at that point in time. He lived in Spain. And he was torn. On one hand, he had a tremendous love for Eretz Yisrael that was part of his hashkafas his entire life. And he always wished and prayed that he would have a chance to make aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, even though the Mashiach hasn't come yet, because as I pointed out, he believed it's a mitzvah sayyachar afil of his managolos. But how can he forsake his beloved congregation of thousands and thousands and thousands of Jews, maybe even millions of Jews, who lived in the Swadeshul world of Spain, of Italy, of that whole part of the world, Portugal, How could he forsake them as being the Gadol HaDor, their posek, to make a personal Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael? And quite obviously, once he would do that, his contact with them, his ability to be mashpia upon them, wouldn't be there because he didn't have multimedia to communicate with them if he made this type of trip. So most of his life, he stayed in Spain and wrote his Perushim, I mean, which to this very day are classics and all parts of Torah. And it was status quo until the 1200s, 1250s and 1260s, when all of a sudden the church, under the instigation of a person who's known as Pablo Christianity. Pablo Christianity was the name of a Jew who was a yeshiva bachar, who had a pretty strong Torah education, but he shmad himself and he became a Christian. So it was on Pablo Christianity. And he convinced the church that he knew so much Torah that he would be able to debate the Ramban, Nachmanides, and prove that, in fact, Christianity is the real religion, and Judaism is no longer the real religion. And he convinced the church that he has enough knowledge to literally have a successful debate against the Gadol HaDor. And they took this information to the King of Spain, and they basically told him to use his authority, his power, to convince and force the Ramban to have this debate, because they were hoping that this guy would win the debate and they were able then to shmad all the Jews of Spanish and the Sephardic Jewry to join the church. So this became a major hot cause celebre. Ultimately, the king called the Ramban in and told him that I'm representing, you know, the other side, and we're basically challenging you to a debate. So the Ramban says, it's very nice you challenge me to the debate, but I have one major concern. And my major concern is not the debate with this guy. My concern is I don't want to win a battle and lose a war. Which meant to say that if I beat him in the debate, I don't want later on to have my life threatened. I don't want to have my mishpacha's life threatened. I don't want to have the Swedish Jews and the Spanish and the Swedish Empire, this part of the world, threatened as well by the church or by yourself. So you have to guarantee me, as being the king of this region, the most powerful king, that you will make sure that if for some reason I succeed in my debate, when I say things in my dispute that might not be pleasing to the Christian church, that I will not be in any danger nor anybody else I mentioned, and you as the king have the power militarily, politically, and such to protect. So without that guarantee, I'm not going to undergo this type of debate. So the king came back and said to him, I thought about it, it's a valid point, and I'm giving you my word that if you go through this debate, whatever happens, you will be protected by the monarchy, you and your mishpacha and your people, your students, quality Jewish people, and no harm will come. But we want this debate to take place once and for all to set the record straight. Are you the chosen religion? Are we the chosen religion? And this is a very, very big, powerful point being pushed by the church. So if you're willing to do it, and I urge you to do it, let's get on with it. So the Ramban took him on. And there wasn't just one debate. There were multiple debates. And the Ramban was very smart in what he did. He basically took notes on the questions and the answers from both sides. Ultimately, this was published later on. It was called the Vikuach Ramban. And later on, in our period of time, Chevel, who was a big scholar when it came to Ramban and other literature, reprinted the Vikuach Ramban in his Kisvei HaRamban with Girsos and Kisvei Yad, to make sure it's as accurate as possible. Later on, for the English-speaking public, Chevel then translated the Vikulich into English, like all the other works he wrote on Chumash and his Kesavim. And it's available to this very day, but it became a classic. It became a classic. And the fact of the matter is, when you read through this Vikulich HaRambam, you're able to see very quickly that this Pablo Christianity fooled the church into thinking that he was on the caliber and the level to debate with the Ramban, the Gadol Hadar. And everything he threw at the Ramban, with all the Mamori Chazal trying to prove the efficacy of his argument and the lack of efficacy of the Jewish counter-argument, all collapsed under the power of the Ramban's scholarship and knowledge and historical perspectives as well. There's no question by the time this debate was over, which took a whole bunch of times, and at these debates, don't think you didn't have all the church fathers and all the great heads of Christianity, plus the king present, to watch and to hear. Too much nachas ruach they didn't have, because the Ramban was allowed to say what he felt he had to say, and boy did he say what he had to say. I mean, his critiques of the virgin birth, of Yashka, and that God had to be born to a woman, etc., etc. I mean, all that stuff, what he made fun of it, and he was mechat, and he literally took it apart. The fact that all the promises that were supposed to happen to the Jewish world and the world at large by Mashiach coming, the opposite happened when JC came along. I mean, he literally tore apart the entire theological underpinnings of the Christian church. And at the end of the debate, the king could obviously, who was an ardent Christian, said, in a backhanded compliment, "I never heard somebody present such a powerful argument against the church and supporting Judaism, even though he's wrong, but I never heard such a beautiful presentation and such a powerful presentation," and et cetera, and et cetera. And the debate was over. And the debate was over. You know, the Ramban reminded the king what he promised him. And he went his way, et cetera, and et cetera. I mean, the king wanted to offer him a reward, a present for having won the debate technically. He didn't want to take anything. But then, a couple of weeks later on, the king calls him in and tells him, "I have some bad news for you." "What's the bad news?" "That as powerful as I am as the king, and as great as my armies and my military power might be, but I'm dealing in a world that the church is just physically bigger and larger and more spread out, and in many respects more powerful politically and otherwise than I am as the king. And there's no way that I can really honestly keep my promise to protect you in particular after what happened in that debate, especially the way you criticized the church and the way you really criticized them in a very, very disrespectful and a very dismissive fashion. The church is going nuts. The church is going crazy. They feel that as long as you're in this world, their power, their influence, their ability to draw people into Christianity will never take place. And therefore, they're planning one way or another, is the deep state, to literally get rid of you. So I, because I promised your safety, have to urge you, as a person who keeps his word, that don't rely upon my protection to protect you, because I can't actually do all that I can do. I don't have enough power and I don't have enough coverage. I would suggest you pick yourself up and get out of this area as quick as possible. That's the only way you're going to save yourself from destruction." And at that juncture, the Ramban realized his career as being the Gadol Hadar of Spanish Jewry and being able to stay in location was no longer a possibility. But at that moment in his mind, his aspiration of his life, of finally being able to mekayim his dream of making aliyah to Eretz Israel and no longer have to be mishubad to the Sephardic Jews of that part of the world, had terminated because his life was at stake, b'kuach nefesh. And therefore, he, as a loner, he didn't even take his family because he was going to take a trip. In those days, they didn't have 747s, they didn't have a Zimline. To go from where he had to go to Eretz Yisrael was a very, very dangerous trip. Not too many people survived. Even coming to Eretz Yisrael, who knows what he was going to find over there. He wasn't going to find a Medina with an IDF or a Jewish population to protect him. So he basically made the decision to go as a Yachid and to make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael and to do what he could over there and to benefit from Eretz Yisrael and to live as long as he could over there and to help rebuild the Yishuv. So he made his Aliyah. In the year 1276, that's when he officially came to Eretz Yisrael.
How old was he then?
The man was, he must have been in his early, late, middle 60s, going on to 70. And he made his Aliyah. Yeah, he made his Aliyah, came to Eretz Yisrael. When he came there, he saw the churban of what happened to Eretz Yisrael, how what the Arabs did to the country, what the Turks did to the country, how all the Jewish institutions and buildings were destroyed. When he came to Yerushalayim, the churban that they had wreaked over there was terrible. So for the rest of his life in Eretz Yisrael, he was able to have, there were some Jews who were living there, he established a community, he rebuilt many of the churvos Yerushalayim, the Ramban synagogue that exists today was part of the things he rebuilt, and some other binyanim over there. He had his own yeshiva over there, and a lot of the time he spent, besides trying to help the Jews have some type of semblance of a Jewish Torah community there, a lot of the ksavim that he wrote, especially his Perush and Chumash, he writes that especially when it comes to the geographical information and the, you know, and what Eretz Yisrael is, since he never saw it before with his own eyes, he just relied upon reading other texts. A lot of the corrections and a lot of the finalities of the script of his Perush Lachumash and other works that needed a visualization of Eretz Yisrael to really come to the correct statement and ultimate maskana, all those corrections were made in Eretz Yisrael. Ultimately, he died in Eretz Yisrael, was buried in Eretz Yisrael. What's interesting to this very day is there's a big debate exactly where he's buried. I mean, is he buried, you know, in this place? Is he buried in that place? I read an article tonight, and you know, there are different traditions exactly where his kever is. You know, a number of places claim the Ramban's buried over here. He can only be buried in one of those places. But that's why, you know, people ask me, where is he buried? I was once giving a lecture on the topic, so I said, I really can't give you a 100% answer because in the world of history, not everybody has a real answer. Supposedly there's a cave of the Ramban outside Yerushalayim near one of these Arab cities that they claim that's where his kever is. But it's all over. Some say it's, you know, in Jaffa, some say it's here, some say it's there. He's buried someplace in Eretz Yisrael, but where, only God knows. Now, so the first thing I want to mention is that Halacha 1 on page 2, he was mekayim without a question, and there's no question that he did this without any qualm whatsoever once he was given the freedom to do such. Number two, and that is his adamance that there can't be any other place on the face of this earth that is officially the Jewish homeland except Eretz Yisrael, and the Lashon is also Lasos Meluch L'Klal Yisrael B'chutz L'Eretz. There's no such thing as having a major Jewish metropolis in some other part of the world geographically, and that becoming the alternative to the living and being in Eretz Yisrael. So quite obviously he was very, very, you know, in his mind, if you did that, you're violating an Isar Aseh Min HaTorah, and his Perush L'Chumash, he emphasizes that. So that means that whatever called their specific communities outside Eretz Yisrael, their Eretz Yisrael, or their Yerushalayim, or their, all of them basically were violating what the Ramban felt was halachically prohibited to say. So whether you live in Borough Park, or you live in Williamsburg or New Square, or you live in Flatbush, or even if you live in the five towns, no matter where you live, we might live here, but we have no right to ever say and articulate, this is our Jewish homeland. Ironically, in Jewish history, there were some communities who unfortunately made that mistake. The biggest ones, the most famous ones who made this mistake, were the German communities. I'm going to tell you two stories, which are true stories. And in fact, these stories are so true that I'll tell you where to look tonight. I'm going to get to that. So in the kinos that we recite on Tisha B'Av, if you'll take the time tonight to look in Kina Chafei, especially if you have the Art Scroll version, there's a whole little narrative underneath describing this specific capital. But this specific capital, according to the Gedolim, was written as a reminder of what happened to the Jews of Germany because of their belief that living in the Rhineland and in Germany was an alternative to Eretz Israel. I mean, the first famous story, this is a very famous story, is that when Churban Bayis Rishon took place, so most of the Jews were exiled to Babylonia. That's where most of Jewry went. Many people are not aware of the fact that there was a small minority of Jews that were able to escape and were able to openly head towards the Rhineland, towards Germany, and set up a very established community in the German area and established very, very famous cities over there. And, Worms was one of them, you have other cities as well that were part of these specific communities. And the fact of the matter is that during the 7 years of Galus Bavel, the Jews established a very, very established German Jewish community in the Rhineland. When Ezra and Nehemiah finally, at the end of 7 years, brought back as many Jews as they could from the Persian Babylonian Empire to rebuild Eretz Israel, they sent a letter to the Jews of Germany saying, we now want to welcome you back, join our endeavor. We're building the second temple, the second base of Migdash. You don't have to live in Golos anymore. You can come back and participate. And the letter they got back from the Jews of this specific area is that they basically don't have to come back to Eretz Israel. The Jewish communities they established in that part of the Rhine, that part of Germany, was in fact their new Eretz Israel, their new Jerusalem. You know, that's their place. Had no desire to want to return to Eretz Israel. It's a very famous story. And the postscript of that story is ultimately what happened in the time of the 1000s, during the time of the Crusades. When the Crusaders were leaving Europe for the purpose of going towards Eretz Israel to tear it away from the Arabs or from the Turks and other peoples who were in control and tried to restore the land to the tutelage and to the supervision of the Christian Church, who they believed they came in place of the Jews when it comes to becoming the new chosen people. So some of the popes, some of the major Christian leaders figured, literally, let's kill two birds with one stone. So since they're en route with their weaponry to make a war with people living in Eretz Israel, we have a whole bunch of Jews that are en route who killed our Messiah, who killed our God, and they have weapons with them, which means the Crusaders. So they basically portray to the Crusaders, you have a mitzvah deraisa to literally get rid of all these Jews who killed your Messiah and killed God. And therefore, what they did, the Crusaders, to these German communities, to decimate them, to destroy them, to literally destroy the Jews who were living there, Later on, the author of the Sefer Me'iris Anayim, the Siman Shulchan Aruch, wrote later on that these specific communities, whether it's Worms or all the other ones in those vicinities, if they were destroyed by the Gentiles during the Crusades, Nebuch was a divine payback for why many years early, when they were asked to make Aliyah to join to rebuild Eretz Israel, and they showed total apathy and lack of concern, in Shemayim there was a kitrig that these Christian Meshugayim were willing to leave their homelands of Europe and take a dangerous trip and make a major campaign to fight a war to capture Eretz Israel. So they showed more concern of Mesiris Nefesh for Eretz Israel than the Jews who were living quietly, peacefully, and with total lack of regard for Eretz Israel. They looked upon this like a Midas Adin, punishing them for that type of behavior. And this capital of Mitain Roshi, Mayim Veini Mekar Nozlai, was the capital written to commemorate that specific tragedy of those specific communities that were killed because of their mios, their lack of regard, a desire to come and return to rebuild Eretz Israel. The Samar, on his one of his swam that he wrote, basically talks about this, and quite obviously this is what this capital, this Kina Kufay, is all about.
But
I can't rationalize anything, but let me go one step further. The fact of the matter is, you think you would learn from history, but the fact of the matter is the German Jews didn't learn from history. Because when you had in the 1920s, 1930s, you had Ramea Simcha of Davinsk coming to the Jews of Germany, in that case the Jews of Europe, and when he came to Berlin and tried to convince them that there was a tremendous hate of Jews brewing in Europe, and there was going to be an explosion, and there might even be ultimately like a Holocaust, even though they didn't know the proportions. But the Chafetz Chaim already warned his Talmidim and others and say that you think World War I was bad, you haven't seen what's going to happen in World War II. As the Chafetz Chaim claimed that World War I was Gog and Magog war number one, that World War II is going to be Gog and Magog number two, and there's going to be a Gog and Magog number three, but once again, that's far off in the future. But Gog and Magog number two, which is World War II, was already known in the Torah community as a nevuah of what the Chafetz Chaim and other gedolim felt. So he came to Germany to convince the German Jews, because the Chafetz Chaim says the only issue the Jews are going to have is to leave Europe quickly and make aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, because Eretz Yisrael will not be touched by this churbin. That's where the salvation is going to be. So just get your head of sex out of there, move to Eretz Yisrael quickly to save yourself from this anti-Semitic wave of destruction against European Jewry.
He also approved them moving to America, even though it was a very risky move.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but I'm saying his initial mahalach was, let's pick ourselves up and go to Eretz Israel, etc. And he told his son to send letters and to support that. So what happened was, is that the heads of the German community, especially those in Berlin, said to him, with all due respect, we don't have to go to Israel. We have our Israel. Berlin is our Jerusalem. They used that lashon. And he was so taken aback by their rejection of his request. In his Meshech Chachma on Chumash, in Bechol Kosai, at the end by the Klalos, he writes over the events that took place, and he bemoans the fact that they lost the opportunity a second time in world history. They didn't learn from the first mistake they made, going back to the 1000s and going back to 1,000 years before them. So the fact of the matter is, German Jews Bechlal, you can even see, you know, in sometimes statements made by Hirsch and other gedolim of that community, they were not the biggest Zionistic personalities. Rav Schwab was not the greatest Zionistic personality when it came to Eretz Israel. And that was the German Jew attitude, for whatever reason it might be, you know. The famous line was, God didn't give the Torah in Eretz Yisrael. He gave it in the Midbar to show you you don't need Eretz Yisrael to be Hashem Eterev and Mitzvahs, you know. So the fact of the matter is, you know, that was part of their philosophy to this very day. And that's why, you know, many of the German Gedolim felt uncomfortable with Agudas Israel, because at that time Agudas Israel was tremendously Zionistic. Right. A lot of the Lutheran yeshivas were tremendously involved with Eretz Israel, the Telz of Hevra, the Saratske Mishpacha, tremendously involved in Eretz Israel. And in fact, because they were so involved with Eretz Israel and so supportive of the endeavor of establishing a yeshiv, especially after the Balfour Declaration and after the League of Nations and such, they were pushing and pushing and pushing and soliciting. The fact is, Satmar, who initially was part with other Hasidic Rebbes of Aguda, broke with them because his attitude was just the opposite. His attitude was, we're basically causing Churban over here because we're rebelling against the nations of the world and we're violating the Shvuos, etc., etc. That's what he developed, this whole thesis. He was the one who developed, the first one who developed the thesis, believing that was Munkach.
Yes, Munkach.
And then Munkach then was Mashpi upon the Satma. Yeah, Munkach was the Yeshiv Reish. No reflection upon you, see. And then, I know. That's why I have to be careful.
He married into it, right?
And then Satma really was the one who was Mushba from that.
You are listening to Ben's Torah.
Yeah.
And they came to the Rebbe, and they said he will not come in. He will not come in. They turned around. They can't explain why. They turned around and they left. And so that was part of the
aura. The aura. The aura.
Now,
the aura.
We don't know what would happen in World War II.
Well, we know what happened in World War II.
Because he wasn't alive.
In terms of the Rebbe,
who passed away in 1937.
Yeah, I know. He
well sick.
But you had the Satmar Rebbe there already. You had all
then,
the.
But that, by that time, his son-in-law had taken over, my father-in-law had taken over, and he was very pro running away from Munkach, and he's screaming, yelling at everybody to leave Munkach, and he himself also ran away. Mm-hmm. And he tried to get his mother-in-law, who lived with his wife, mm-hmm. to marry his daughter.
Interesting.
To come, and she was going back for her husband. She said, no, he said he wasn't with her. You know, World War II, she repeated the story. He said, no, it's different now. When she finally decided to come, it was a day or two late, and so she perished in the Holocaust. Mm. He went on to save many, many Jews.
They went to Brazil. Would they go to Brazil? Would they go to South America, no?
No. So then, from there they went to Israel.
Yeah.
He got visa to Israel.
Okay.
He went through with Turkey.
Yeah.
They went by boat, stopped in Turkey to give birth to my wife.
Right.
And then they went on to Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah.
And they remained in Eretz Yisrael for a period of time until just before 48.
Yeah.
Into 48, maybe.
Right.
Where he ran for chief rabbi of Tel Aviv.
He did? Yeah, interesting.
But I think he had a withdrawal, and there was a huge amount of opposition against him.
Right.
Because of the Munkach views.
Right.
Anti-Zionist views. They were able to bring him down, even though his views, he was in trouble with them. Because his views were always more on the left.
Interesting,
side.
Interesting. So when did he make? When did he go to Brazil?
He lost his wife at that point. She died.
Yeah.
She died.
Yeah.
She was at the age of 26, 27. She had 5 children already.
Right.
Passed away, and then his life just turned around completely because he married another woman.
Yeah.
Who had no Hasidic background at all.
Yeah.
And then they brought him to America to try to reestablish
Munkach, yeah.
Munkach, but without the support of his wife and all that, and also damaged by the war.
Yeah.
So he so much during the war and everything, and having lost his wife.
Yeah.
Then he ran away to Brazil.
That's when he went to Brazil. What year was that?
So that has to be in the probably in the mid-50s.
Was this here?
Interesting,
no,
you know.
So we now have his history record,
right? Yeah.
He left his new wife was a German woman,
mm-hmm.
and her name was Wallhaus, and she had very fine German parents.
Mm-hmm.
They lived in Israel. They had run away from the thing, and they established a little farm in Ranana.
Uh-huh.
Today it would be worth $1 billion.
Yeah.
A little farm there where they raised children. So they left the children there in Israel. So my wife, the first 3 or 4 years of her life,
yeah.
grew up with the chickens in Ranana.
Uh-huh.
And plus, the Hebrew is very much a mud character, as well as Brazilian is. Eventually, and he married this new wife who was only 19 years old. He was 31.
Uh-huh.
And he moved to, anybody interested in the story? There's a book called Who Will Lead Us? A beautiful book about five Hasidic dynasties, about the leadership, transitional leadership.
Uh-huh.
The first one is about Munkach, uh-huh. It's about 50, 60 pages.
Uh-huh.
And Who Will Lead Us? Is Samuel Hamrat.
Uh-huh.
Samuel Hamrat was a sociologist.
Right, right, sure, sure. Famous, yeah,
and
famous.
The book is highly recommended if you want to know about Lubavitch, Bobov, Munkach,
Satma.
Satma, fourth Satma, and the fifth one,
Whatever it is, but interesting.
Well, worth reading. From all the people I know who read it, who have nothing to do with Hasidic, but altogether, just.
You gave me a
cannot put it
out. So you gave me a copy, I gotta open up the book. Okay. So let's continue. So we have over here an irony that but obviously the Ramban said you can't establish a Jewish homeland outside Eretz Israel. So I always say to people how ironic it is that when it came to the secular Zionistic movement, when Herzl was the big leader over there, that basically speaking, somebody convinced him that if you want to have less opposition politically, why bother with Palestine? You can get an easier Jewish homeland in Uganda. And he came to the Zionistic, the secular Zionistic convention over there with a tremendous political motivation to try to convince them that let's push for Uganda and forget about Palestine. And he pushed very hard. And ultimately he called for a vote on this, and what finally made him ultimately lose that was the Jews of Russia. As assimilated, as persecuted as they were, the Jews of Russia... Yeah. The Jews of Russia...
It's actually also the Christians.
Yeah.
What they call the Christian Zionists.
Yeah.
Which Truman happened to be one too.
Yeah.
A lot of Christian Zionists.
Yeah.
They said, no, it's Israel. We won't support you. And you will never go anywhere, you Zionists.
Right.
Without the support of Christian Jews.
But I want to tell you something about Truman in a second.
Alpha was also Christian.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is that the Russian, at the actual convention, the Russian Jews basically voted it down. And the story goes is that Herzl felt so depressed that he lost that vote. He ultimately died with the agbis nefesh that he couldn't convince to make aliyah to Uganda. So I always say to myself, I still don't understand. Once you know that history, if it was up to him, that Har Herzl would not be in Yerushalayim Yad HaKadosh, would be in Uganda, you know, where Idi Amin. But the fact of the matter is that there's an interesting history. People don't realize the anti he had, and he died of a broken heart because they did that. But in any event, Benkach or Benkach, for the Ramban, nobody has a right to call any place in Chutz Laretz, Eretz Israel, or the Jewish homeland, for one simple reason, because all the things I mentioned last week, of the Hashgacha Pratas HaMiyuchedes, and all the Neshem HaKechaba, that was set on a piece of land that's delineated by the borders mentioned in Parshas Matzei. You have a map over there, I showed you last week, with a map, quite obviously doesn't have Uganda as part of that map. The map that I showed you, Rabbi Yisrael, has the borders of Eretz Yisrael as the delineating Pashas Masai, and that is where Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, is located today. And that map is the place we had all the promises. This is on page number 11. This is the place that the Rabban Hashem said in Pashas Masai are the borders of Eretz Yisrael. If you notice over here, they drew it that the borders are going into the Mediterranean Sea, which is where the gas that they found in Eretz Yisrael with those gas rigs. So, you know, everybody wanted the Taina, you know, it's the Arabs. it's within the biblical borders to show you that, you know, that's part of Eretz Yisrael per se. But in any event, Beikach or Beinkach, we find over here that this was an important factor, an important yesod. Another important yesod, Rabbi Yisai, is an historical factor about the borders of Eretz Yisrael, which I've mentioned over the years, but I want to mention now since I do have the picture in front of you. If you look at the Maror Mekomo, so I just want to show you something quite interesting over here, and that is I have the page where you have on it the concept of the Bris Bein HaBesarim, which we read about in Pasha's Lech Lecha a couple of weeks ago. And in that Bris Bein HaBesarim, in that specific narrative, there is a list of the 10 Umat Olam that lived in Eretz Canaan at the time of the promise of the Bris Bein HaBesarim between Hashem and Avraham Avinu. And in that specific Bris, you have over here, it's on page number 12, that's where it is on the Maror Mekomo, you have a list of the 10 Canaanite nations that lived at the time of the Bris Bein HaBesarim. Well, this is all the way on the left hand side of the page where you have E. You have the land from Phanar Mitzrayim, Nahar Gadol, Nahar Pras, Keni, Knizi, Kadmoni, Chiti, Prizi, Rephaim, Hamori, Kanani, Asher, Girgashi, Yevusi. These are called the 10 Canaanite nations. And what's interesting that the Ramban points out is that when you look at the map that I just showed you on the other page, we have not all the 10 nations' lands given to us. Only 7 of the 10 were given to us. Of course, the nations of the Keni, Knizi, Vikadmoni, which really are today on the eastern side of the Yarden, where you have Jordan and Iraq and Saudi Arabia and Bahrain, you know, and you have part of Syria and you have part of Lebanon, all those countries, ultimately speaking, were part of the Yerusha of the Keni, Knizi, and Kadmoni. They were given to them because two of them were the progeny of Lot, Ammon, Umoav, and one was the progeny of Esav. So this was a divine payback for certain hakaras that Tov Hashem had for them of their dealings, Esav's dealings with Yitzchak and the Kibbutz of Aim and Kedoma, things he did. The good things he did, so he's paid back in this world by getting a little. And he had also Ammon Umayav because of Lot being Malav Avram for a good period of time. So there is in the Torah, you know, specific Isurim in the Chumash that are mentioned explicitly in Bamidbar and later Sefer Devarim that we have no right to make Milchamas to covish their territory. When the Jews were going through the Midbar, they requested Rishus from these nations to pass through the territories to make their trek to Eretz Israel. Ultimately speaking, they were unwilling to do such, and Hashem gave us an Issa Deraisa of not starting up with Muhammad and chepping them. Ultimately speaking, the Ramban says that on the eastern side of the Yarden, you had Oig and Sichon entrenched, and the kings of Eretz Canaan at that point in time relying upon these super giant powers to protect them from any invading armies. So Sichon and Og were not legal residents there. They captured those territories from Ammon and Moav. That's why the Gemara says that Ammon and Moav were basically Tiharo through the kibush of Sichon and Og. Once they captured the Isurim Deraisa of going through and capturing those lands, fell by the wayside. So the Ramban in his Sefer Mitzvah says, I want to tell you a little secret. That what happened that time on a microcosmic level to Sichon V'Og, being Matar, the areas on the eastern side of the Yarden, which ultimately Reuven and God and Chatzir Menach, that they finally got, the same way Tiharo at that point in time, at this point in time, nobody of ethnic origin of Ammon, Umayav, and Edom live in location, because what happened during Bais Rishon, you had the, you know, the whole Mideast being captured by Melech of Assyria and such, and the transfer population centers. So the yichus of all these people, of Ammon, Moav, and Esav are no longer able to be pointed to. So ultimately, he says, "B'maisa Mashiach, all those lands, those of these three, will be given to the Jews in totality, who are still recognizable." Which means that the Arabian Peninsula will be given to us at the end of time. Now, this is on tape. I don't want you to play this tape in the UN, because they can't bear the thought of Shomron and Yehuda under our tutelage as Greater Israel. Little do they realize, according to the Ramban, Greater Israel is the entire Arabian Peninsula. And there's a Maimer Chazal that one day, if that's going to be all of Israel, so Yerushalayim will be the size of the biblical map of Israel today. So people who think they're living outside Yerushalayim, one day they'll realize at the end of time that they're really part of Yerushalayim, because Yerushalayim is going to expand, but the rest of the Mideast is going to become the rest of Eretz Israel. So it's better buy real estate now, because before you know it, it's not so far away. It's going to be part of, part of Yerushalayim Yad HaKadosh. So the fact of the matter is, Chazal already point out that there's going to be a point in time that Israel will control all the oil wells of the Arabian Peninsula.
They'll have gas, they'll have oil.
They'll have total economic freedom, and the Shibud HaMalchus will no longer be upon them, because if anybody wants gas or oil, they're going to have to come to us. So we're no longer going to be bossed around.
Is there a common language in all of Canaan?
I don't know.
Did it resemble Hebrew?
I don't remember.
No, the Torah is something
we had in the Gemara a couple days ago. The Gemara used the Lashon of Canaan, connoting that they basically, the Goyim called the language of the Jews the language of the Canaanites, because even at that time they didn't want to acknowledge us as Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. They called it that. We had it in the Gemara 2 days ago, Masechtas Menaches. But let's get back to this. So if you get back now to the Ramban, I'm just looking at my watch, I don't want to keep you late. So let's go back to the Ramban. So the Ramban over here therefore says that we have to make sure we establish a Jewish homeland within the perimeters of where Eretz Yisrael is supposed to be. Okay. But then I want to deal with number three tonight. And that is the Issa of Mias Eretz. The Ramban says that one of the things that we always have to make sure that we never ever commit again is violate the chet of the Meraglim in the future. And in the Maran HaKamos, if you want to see what the Rebbe Lisham described as the Iker chet of the Meraglim, the Torah doesn't beat around the bush. The Torah tells you what it is. And on page number 10, there are two psukim I have, one from Chumash and one from Tehillim, that describe the chet of the Meraglim. It says over here on page number 10, it says, "V'yodu es ha'aretz Hashem ma'astemba," that Hashem said about the Meraglim's rebellion, "You're going to know about the land that you were ma'astemba." Later on in Sefer Tehillim, David pens it, "Vayim asu be'eretz chemda," that the rejection of Eretz Yisrael by the Meraglim, and then the arousing Klal Yisrael to participate with the Bechiya Shachinam of Tisha B'Av, this was Mia Sa'aretz. So Ramban says that Jews have to rectify that. Instead of having Mia Sa'aretz, you have to have Ava for Eretz, or you have to have a Chukin desire for Eretz Israel. And therefore, based upon that, he quotes that part of the negative Isurim concerning Eretz Israel is the Isa of Mia Sa'aretz. Don't do what the Meraglim did. That is why, interesting enough, Rabbi Isai, there's two pieces I want to mention tonight that are quite fascinating. That if you look on the bottom of the page, over here on page 10, you have a sefer called the Sefer Charedim that was written as a Sefer HaMitzvah. So we still have it today. And this Sefer Charedim in the Tayag Mitzvah of Eretz Israel describes what the attitude of a Jew should be when it comes to Eretz. So I'm reading now over here. Look at the lashon of this Sefer Charedim. She put it up in some Charedi shuls. It says over here, he says, "V'tzorach kol ish Yisrael lechabev Eretz Yisrael ulevo elea mi'af se'aretz b'tshuka gedola gam ha'karovim v'harachokim ha'shechutzala roi lehem shiyun nechsafim u'te'evim aleha." which means we have to have a positive chiba and love for Eretz Yisrael. The bare minimum is that if you can't be there physically, that your heart and mind should be geared to it. You should want to come there. You should be nechsafim to Eva Meleha. That should be the attitude. Whoever was ever in the museum based at Tfutzos in Tel Aviv, in the entry into the museum, there's on the wall a statement, whether it was the Ben Achman Breslov, or someone said, Ani b'mara v'libi b'mizrach. The lady said, but later on you had that repeated by others again afterwards, which means to say that even though I might be outside Eretz Yisrael, but my heart, my mind, my soul are basically geared to Eretz Yisrael. So this mitzvah of Ava for Eretz Yisrael and the feeling of wanting to be there is a very important factor. Now, why am I mentioning this, Rabbi Yisai? This is the frightening part of tonight's shiur, is because I have in the middle of the page a statement made by Rav Yitzchak Arama, who was a contemporary of the Abarbanel. He was part of the 1492 Gerish Svarat from the Inquisition. He escaped with a lot of other people from that point in time. But in his Sefer on Chumash called the Sefer Akedas Yitzchak, famous Akedas Yitzchak, he writes why he thinks after 600 years of the golden era of Spain, when the Jews lived in Spain at that time, that incredible spiritual freedom, there was even intellectual spiritual dialogue going on between the Jewish philosophers and theologians and the Arabs. The ones who hated us were the Christians, but the ones who were getting along with us at that point, ironically, were the Arab world. So he says, you don't want to know why this is happening? Yeah, he wanted to write, you know, why I think it's happening. So let me just read you what he says. He says over here, Mia Sa'aretz, the concept of Mia Sa'aretz, Hu Ha'inyan Asher Omar Aleinu L'chaloseinu B'chol Hadaros, U'ba'avuro Golinu Mi'al Artseinu, V'nisrachaknu Mi'al Admasenu, V'hoyinu Cherpa L'shcheinenu, Lag V'keles L'svivoseinu, The Ein Shemava Lo Shuv El Shlemoseinu Kim Bishuvenu Elecha. He tainted that the Jews in Spain were so comfortable there that they looked upon this now as their makam of homeland, and they therefore had no desire to want to return to Eretz Israel, to leave Spain.
Are we guilty of the same thing here?
I hope not. But the fact of the matter is that was after 600 years of an established Jewish community. All of a sudden, this came along as a wake-up call. The fact of the matter is, I want to distinguish tonight, Tzvi, to literally, you shouldn't walk around now with a feeling that, you know, we're about to be kicked out, even though I'll be honest with you, when you look at the level of anti-Semitism that's erupting in America.
Is there one person in this world that's stopping it, besides
Trump. I knew he was going to say that.
So, I got a dirty look.
Okay, but in any event, the Rebbeinu shows him in control, but I'm going to give you a little happy little statement. And that little happy statement has nothing to do with the president. It has to do with a specific story. During the British Mandate, the story goes that the Britons, even though they supported initially the whole concept of the Jews returning to Eretz Israel and getting then later on the League of Nations and others to be behind us as well, geopolitically, the ones who were controlling the Mideast at that time with their armies was basically Britain. Britain was in control. So during the British Mandate, they quite obviously were forewarned that we can't have a major influx of Jews because the Arabs are going to get angry, and the Arabs control the money and oil and everything else. So they made the British Mandate, and they put quotas. And they gave visas, X amount to each and every country. If Jews want to come here, these are the visas I'm giving you. This is the quota. Once you pass the quota, we're not going to accept any more Jews from that country. So it seems, for whatever reason, the Romanian Jews are very hot to trot to move to Eretz Israel, but the Czechoslovakian Jews were very apathetic. So once the Romanian Jews used up all their visas, they went to their neighbors, the Czechoslovakians, and said, if you're not using them, can we get them instead? So the Czechs said, no problem, take them gesundheit, make believe you're Czechoslovakians, and you'll go with those visas. But they made one little mistake, which wasn't a mistake, but they decided to ask a shayla from Rav Zonenfeld, at that time was one of the Gedolei Hadar in Eretz Israel, to ask his opinion whether they were allowed to use this sheker to make aliyah to Eretz Israel. So to their surprise, he wrote them back, and he wrote the tshuva. He says, it's a ta'eva to Hashem called Eile called Eisa Avel. For you to use Shekin and as a ta'eva of way of coming to Eretz Israel, to use that type of format, the Rabban Hashem doesn't want you to come here that way, and therefore I will not give you permission to make believe you Czechoslovakians to use those visas to come here. So he asked it for them. About 6 months later on, they were able, as Romanian Jews, to get a hold of visas saying that they're Palestinian. Can we first tell them that they're actually Palestinians and they want to return back home? So for, curiosity, they sent to Reb Zonenfeld the same Shayla. We now have visas that were Palestinians. Can we use that? So that, the answer was, he said, yes. So they asked him a question. They said to him, Rebbe, Mefeshtetnish. We are surely not Palestinians, so why is that us and this is mutter? That's the famous kasha. So he says, if you want to know the answer to the question, he says, I want you to look up Kapitel Pezayin, look it up tonight, Pezayin, think of Paz, gold, in Sefer Tehillim. And there's a pasuk that says, Lutzin Yomar, Ish Ish Yulaba. Lutzin Yomar, Ish Ish Yulaba. And he says, if you look in the Gemara in Masechtas Ksubis and Daf Ayin Hey, the Gemara says, why does it say Ish Ish Yulaba? So the Gemara says, Echad Hanolid Ba, for Echad Hametzapel Arosa, you're considered a Ben Zion. A Ben Zion is whether you're born there physically or you're a Metzapel Arosa, you want to be there, you have a Taiva, you have a Ksifa to want to make Aliyah, you're already a Ben Zion even before you make that. So for you to use the Palestinian visas in your Metzapel Arosa, you're a Ben Zion according to Chazal, your Metzapel Arosa, that's Emes. Shteinish of Czechoslovakia, but of, that you can say to you are Metzapel Arosa, you surely are, you're Ben Zion. Later on, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik says that the basic source of the Chol Kashvus, that whatever Jew returns from Cholos is automatically a citizen of Israel, he says, is based upon that pasuk and based upon that Maimer Chazal. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said that. So in any event, they returned to Eretzel with that specific guise. So why am I saying that to you? Because if you look at the Torah Dikah Orthodox Jewry today in America, especially the more modern Orthodox, but even the Torah Dikah world by and large, the fact of the matter is, if we're not living there yet, there's surely a Metzapel Arosa, because we're supporting yeshivas in Eretz Israel. I mean, we're supporting the Torah communities in Eretz Israel. We're supporting Eretz Israel, period. When we travel there, and we help the economy, we're Metzapel Arosa. That takes away something that didn't happen with Spanish Jewry. There was no Metzapel Arosa there, zero. That's why I think we're a little safer today than we were at that time, because there is a Chibuf Eretz Yisrael. We send our kids to learn in Eretz Yisrael, in the seminaries, in the yeshivas. At that time, nobody dreamt you would have a yeshiva with 25, 30,000 guys sitting and learning. Nobody thought you would have all the seminaries. There are more people learning in Eretz Yisrael between the boys and girls school, Beryl Wine said now, that ever existed in Jewish history throughout thousands of years of Jewish history. So we're a Metzapel Arosa. If we're Metzapel Arosa, I think we're a little safer over here than we were then. That's why I don't think we're having a major golus. And on the contrary, America is so supportive now, very well, especially now. We're basically doing what Persia did in Bayeshin, I think I mentioned you many times. And that's why, quite obviously, the same way they help facilitate the political ability for us to overcome the anti-Semitic Gaius wrote the ones that prevent us making Aliyah during Bayesheni and rebuilding the temple. We have a similar phenomenon taking place today. So you have a little hope on the surface over here when it comes to the direction we're heading. We're in Tzapel Arosa, and that's how the Sefer of the Charedim says that what do we have to be? Whether Krovim or Chokim, Nichsofim v'Te'evim is like Yom Tzapel Arosa. We have to have that. If we have that attitude, we're Zionists, we're part of Eretz Israel, even though we're living here, and we should realize that that's a positive attitude, and that's something we should be proud of.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.